In this episode, we sat down to talk with Cecile Richards. Cecile Richards is a national leader for women's rights and social economic justice. As president of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America and Planned Parenthood Action Fund for more than a decade, Richards has worked to increase affordable access to reproductive health care and strengthen the movement for sexual and reproductive rights. She and her husband, Kirk Adams, have three children and live in New York City and Maine.
Hi, Cecile. Thank you for sitting down and talking with me today. For those listeners who haven't read your book, Make Trouble, Stand Up, Speak Out, and Find the Courage to Lead, My Life Story, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. And it's great to be here. I've been on book tour, and this is actually, I'm kind of wrapping up tonight, so this is pretty exciting to end up in Ann Arbor. The book, I grew up in Texas, so the book is about what it was like growing up with progressive parents in a very conservative state and kind of learning really from them what it meant to stand up for the things you believed in and learn how to make good trouble, as my friend Congressman John Lewis would say. So I guess the book is a little bit of a memoir, but it's also kind of a how-to, I hope. And the idea was to really inspire people to do more than they're doing. As we say, kind of start before you're ready, and especially in this moment in our country.
Sure. So while you were in the process of writing this book, did you ever get stuck? And if you did, where did you look for inspiration?
Well, in a way, I didn't get stuck because it was one of these things where I had to get it done. I was the president of Planned Parenthood. I was also writing a book on the weekend. I had no time. Like most women, I had no time. So I kind of had to make it happen. And unfortunately, I worked with a young woman who was had worked with me at Planned Parenthood, and we kind of went back and forth on things. And the great thing was it was wonderful to have a kind of a co-author because she could remember the stories I had forgotten or the people I'd met along the way, because there's a lot of stories in the book about people I met through organizing and definitely through my work at Planned Parenthood. So I guess if I ever was going to get stuck, Lauren Peterson, and that's her name, she kind of helped me kind of jog my memory.
Good. I think everybody probably needs someone like that when they're
Believe me. It was great.
All right. How would you describe yourself as a reader? For example, I would say that reading is the lover that I take for granted. I don't check in as much as I should, but I know that it'll be there for me when I come back.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Well, I don't have anything that eloquent to say.
Or that sad to say, right?
Well, I think it's funny because I grew up in Texas where, I wasn't exposed to a lot of different kinds of people and ideas. I mean, it was just really my upbringing. Books to me were this escape hatch, and it's how I learned about people whose lives were very different from mine. And I think that's probably for me. It is books are a way of, particularly when your day to day is kind of crazy and kind of intense. Books to me have always been like this dreamlike place I could go and just think about something completely different than the day-to-day. And that's still true.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you some more questions about your reading life.
Okay.
I wish there were a word for it, but readerography sounds ridiculous. Fun, but ridiculous.
No, that's good. I like that.
What's the best book you've ever received as a gift?
Wow. Well, I guess I was actually kind of thinking about this. I think it was when I was young, my dad, who is still alive, he's a civil rights lawyer, and he gave me a book by George Orwell that probably very few people listening to this may have read, called Down and Out in Paris and London. And it was one of Orwell's really autobiographical books. And I became a labor organizer right out of college. And I think my dad really had the biggest influence on me in that. And he gave me books that talked about working people and their experience. And I do think it's what led me to be a union organizer for many, many years. And so, and I guess it's like anyone, probably some of the things your parents gave you, they had no idea at the time the import that would be, but those are the memories, that I have. And the only other thing I would say is my mother's best friend was a librarian, a school librarian, Virginia Whitten. And we grew up as kids. She had kids. When mom had kids, we all grew up together. And Virginia Whitten did more to expose me to literature as a public librarian and as a school librarian than any person in my life. And I just actually last night or yesterday, I got to be in Detroit talking to a lot of librarians. And it just made me remember and appreciate even more the role that librarians play in the world in bringing literature into our lives.
Are there any classic novels that you only recently read for the first time?
You know, I'm kind of embarrassed. I actually really don't think there are. I feel like now with the explosion, I mean, I guess this is kind of an excuse, but with the explosion of new authors on the scene, and there's so many things I haven't read that have just been written that I probably haven't done the work of going back and rereading. I mean, I've gone back like everybody and reread Jane Austen probably a million times. But right now, I'm so excited by the pile of books in next to my bed that just came out.
Sure.
And to me, that's and obviously stories that have never been told. You know, it's just
sure.
such a diversity of literature now that is so compelling. So yeah, I guess I get back to that. Maybe I could get some tips from you about what I should.
I'm not the right one. I'll hook you up with a different librarian. Like, I looked at these questions and I was like, these, I don't know that I would do very well with any of these. I'm impressed by your answers. What's the funniest book you've ever read?
Okay, well, I did read this one, and this is also a book probably that is really gone. Like kind of unnoticed now, but it was called Lucky Jim. It's by Kingsley Amis, and it's just a hilarious book. And it is so other, like outside of my experience, but I loved it. And so I recommend it to anyone. In fact, once I made a book group read it, and everyone's looking at me like, what were you thinking? But it's really funny and very, it's very witty. But I also will say I went through an obsession with P.G. Wodehouse and read all of the Jeeves books, and I thought they were hilarious. But again, I think that's just more my sense of humor. Maybe that kind of like wry British sort of semi-cynical humor is my thing. But I could now actually – I've read the Wodehouse books to some of my kids. We've read some of them together. And I mean, we just like laugh hysterically. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're just a different kind of funny.
You're kind of funny.
Yes, exactly.
What moves you most in a piece of literature?
Well, I saw that was a question. I mean, obviously, characters, I think. It's just, to me, again, I remember growing up, I grew up in Texas, really outside of Austin. And I remember in junior high, kind of consuming books like, when Virginia Whitten gave me I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. And at that point in my life, I mean, the experiences recounted in that book were like so outside of my day-to-day life. And then I read Man-Child in the Promised Land by Claude Brown, I believe. And it's just interesting where I think those are you remember characters and people's experiences. I think that's true in our life, in our day-to-day life. I believe stories are the only way we really do kind of remember things. But for me, getting to hear and read about, and when I was a young kid, like, reading biographies of girls who did exciting things, those are the characters that you really remember and the things you remember about the books, because often they were painting a life that was very, very far from, growing up in at that point, kind of rural Texas.
Okay. What book do you think would make a great film or TV adaptation?
Okay, this is a kind of a crazy question because I was thinking about that because so many books have been, and now, I mean, it's really exciting because explosion of good TV, but I've kind of became obsessed lately with Haruki Murakami, and which I know he's not everybody's thing, but, and I love a lot. I actually looked up to see if any of his books have been made into movies because obviously they're sort of, they're so fantastical and otherworldly, and yet they have very worldly, people and cats and dogs and birds and things like that. But they really haven't been made into movies. It would take a very special person to be able to put these, put his books into, into a movie. But I would love to see them. I find them some of the most fascinating books that I've recently, kind of read. And again, I know they're not for everyone, but if you get into them, even my son, I made him, I said, really, just try. And he reads everything. And he was like, I kept waiting for the ending. I said, I know, Dan, there isn't an ending.
That's
but they're kind of, they're mystical. He has such a command of language and paints scenes and surreal settings in that are amazing. So actually, maybe it would all be lost if they were put onto the film or TV. But to me, I would love to see them. I would love to see them live.
That's super interesting. His work always reminds me of paintings, where something is a little bit off. Like if you saw a painting that's just set in an office, but somebody's got like a goldfish for a head or something like that.
Right.
Like everything else looks normal. That's what his books remind me of. Those weird.
Yeah, no, there's always, it's like everything is kind of normal, but then a little bit off, or you go obviously into like another dimension of time or, and also his characters are, they're kind of like every day, seemingly, and then they're not.
Until they're not.
Until you find out. So yeah, I'm a big, I highly recommend.
What character in a book would you like to be best friends with?
I know, I saw this. I honestly can't think of a book that I would want to be best friends with anyone. Because then it kind of would spoil the whole thing. I guess that unusual nature of that. But if I think about maybe if I think about like who I'd like to know, like growing up as a young girl, I read every Nancy Drew mystery that was ever written. It was just like, I mean, they just couldn't come out fast enough. And of course, they weren't that good, but they were so exciting. And they started a lifelong love, not only of reading, but of reading detective novels and mysteries. And so it would be super fun to like hang out with Nancy Drew for like a weekend and like, you know, go find the old clock or do whatever other crazy thing she was doing. And it kind of made me think of another one of my favorite books of all time, which now everybody has heard of, but at the time I think was not that it was popular, but I think probably, you know, a generation ago, and that was A Wrinkle in Time and Meg and her adventures and her, you know, worldliness. And anyway, that would be really fun. I love the idea of sort of exploring other universes in the way that she does and time travel. And so maybe those are a couple of people. I don't know if I want to be best friends with them, but just getting to hang out with them for a day or two would be really fun.
This is a question where we're trying to, like, figure out who you are. No, I'm joking.
That's okay. I'll tell you anything.
How do you organize your books?
I know. I do not organize my books. I couldn't believe that was even a question. I just pile them up and pile them up until the table's going to fall over, and then I try to go and shelve them. In fact, I find it funny. In New York now, there's The Wing, which is this women's kind of office place, and they organize their books by color, which I can't even imagine doing. I could never find anything that way. But I would say my books are completely disorganized. And also because I live in an apartment, you just can't have an unlimited number of books.
Sure.
And so I feel like my husband, he's a big reader too. So we're just like overwhelmed with books. And unfortunately, I more often have to purge books than I do organize them. So that's probably my confession there. But like a lot of people, I usually have two or three books I'm reading at the same time. So they're in various levels of like, you know, on my nightstand. Although I've gotten, I don't know, I'm curious, I guess we're catching on, that I'm actually reading more and more books on my iPad and even on my phone, because I live in New York. I ride the subway every morning, and there's nothing quite like having a book on your telephone. You can just be reading as you commute. So I'm kind of getting used to not having physical books anymore. And actually, I just started listening to the first book on tape or, you know, recorded book I've ever read.
How's that going for you?
Well, I did it because it was a book I thought, I really want to read this book. I'm never going to do it.
Sure.
And so unless I listen to it. So it's How to Change Your Mind by Michael Pollan. And it's really interesting about research into psilocybin and, you know, psychedelics. And it's a little dry, I'm going to be honest, but it's fascinating. And so I decided to start listening to it while I run. And so it's actually it's working. I still like reading books, but it's nice to know that that's an option. And I know actually when I read my own book out loud, so many women have stopped me and said, "I listened to your book because I can listen to it when I'm driving, when I'm doing the dishes, a lot of things." And so I actually think it's a great invention for particularly for women who don't have time to sit down and read.
Sure, I feel like it's a different skill than reading.
Yeah, I mean, you still have to kind of pay attention.
Yeah.
That's the only thing is, like, I feel like I couldn't multitask and listen to a book. Otherwise, I would have to go back and, you know, re-listen to a chapter. But it's nice, and I love listening to people read their own books.
Yeah.
And that was actually honestly, it was so fun to read my own book. I decided, wow, if I can't get another job, maybe I'll just be a book reader for a living, because this is really fun, because you kind of get to play all the characters and, you know, try to do different accents and stuff. So that was, I kind of like it. I think it's a good invention. Yep.
And finally, what are you reading right now?
Okay, so I have been reading some of, like, a, kind of a bizarre collection of books, but a couple that I want to just mention, because I'm so, like, I just make people go buy books once I find them. So I just read The Soul of an Octopus, which is a book by Cy Montgomery, and I just, I'm obsessed with it. It's fascinating. It's about octopuses, and actually that's one of the first things you learn when you read it, is it is not octopi. That is not the plural. It's octopuses. But it's a fascinating book about how smart octopuses are. And anyway, I won't spoil it, but I hope I can say enough to just intrigue people into reading it. I think it's really fantastic. And another book that's kind of like that, that is like a subject matter that I would never thought I would read, was Barbarian Days, which actually I think won the Pulitzer, by William Finnegan. And it is about him, his life as a surfer. I mean, he's a writer. He writes for The New Yorker. He's a very accomplished writer, but it's about kind of growing up surfing and going surfing all around the world. I just couldn't put it down. Now, again, may not be for everyone, but I thought it was fascinating. And I was trying to think of the other couple of books I've read recently that I really can highly recommend. One that a friend of mine just mentioned, and so I bought it and read it in one day, and it's called Heavy, by Casey Limon, or Lyman. I'm not sure how you pronounce his last name. It's really interesting. Growing up in the South, I mean, just things. His life was very different than mine, but it's a fabulous book. And I also just had the opportunity to do a book event with Roxane Gay, who I just sort of followed because she's amazing. But until then, I hadn't read Hunger. And I have to say, it's one of the most incredible books, not only because she's a great writer, but it is, you know, it is raw, it is honest, it's just incredible. And so I just am so appreciative of authors who just leave it all out there for you. And very compelling book. And then I'm reading a bunch of trashy mystery novels. I just like...
Because you like them, and that's a
I love them.
Reason.
I love them. No, I totally love them. I mean, as a kid, I remember going to my grandmother's house, and she had the complete works of Sherlock Holmes, and I like... You know, that's, I just like, once I read all those, it's just like, couldn't ever get enough. So I tend to find an author that I like and then just binge read all of them, which is really, it's kind of fun.
That's so funny.
Yeah. So I guess from Nancy Drew to, actually just read these three books by, I think her name is Jane Harper. She's an Australian, these kind of mysteries set out in the outback. And anyway, love them.
That's fun.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us today, and it's been great talking to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and it's exciting to be here. Thanks for doing this show.
We asked some readers to call in and tell us about their favorite books. Listen on for some of their responses.
My name is Elizabeth, and the book I'm most embarrassed to have never read is 1984 by George Orwell. I also never read Fahrenheit 451. Can you believe it?
My name is Eli, and the book that I am most embarrassed to have never read is Slaughterhouse-Five. I love Vonnegut. I read, just devoured Cat's Cradle, like several of his other books, but I do not care about Billy Pilgrim. Screw that guy.
My name's Sarah, and I'm embarrassed never to have read Moby Dick by Herman Melville. A lot of people have never read Moby Dick, but I really should. I've read multiple history books about whaling, about towns like New Bedford and Nantucket that depended on whaling. I have gone out of my way to visit whaling museums. Also, I own three copies of Moby Dick. I really need to read Moby Dick.
For more AADL podcasts, visit aadl.org/podcasts. Thanks for listening.